Welcome to Transform Now, a podcast focused on intelligent automation and brought to you by SS&C Blue Prism. On this program, we talk about how organizations globally are rethinking the way they operate, utilizing process orchestration and AI-enabled digital workers to free up humans to do the work that matters most. We also share insights and tips on how you can embrace this new way of working and unleash your full potential. Let's get into the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Transform Now podcast. I'm Michael Marchuk.
And I'm Brad Hairston.
And this is our weekly pulse check on automation and AI news. Before we jump into it, all of the links for the articles we'll be covering today are in our show notes. So, Brad, let's just jump right into our headlines this week. So this week we start off with one from Data Horizons Research that can be found on Yahoo Finance. It says business process management market to reach a USD, so $83.2 billion USD by 2032, which is not that far off. And yeah, it goes on to say, in terms of some of the rate of an increase in this thing, it was astounding in my mind. It's almost 18% year-over-year growth. What are your thoughts on that?
It's incredible. I mean, if you told me I could put my money in an investment that was going to grow at 18% per year, I think I would do that. It's pretty amazing. This just aligns so well with what we are seeing in the market, with especially with our customers. RPA and BPM have many times existed separately, different groups using them, different sponsors, but we're seeing them come together in a pretty significant way. And I think companies in general are realizing that today, processes can't afford to be tweaked here and there. They need to be, really re-engineered. They need to be changed dramatically. And so the best way to do that is to use business process management, to use orchestration to do that. And then RPA fits into that wherever you can automate steps. So I think this is affirmation for that.
I totally agree. I think we've heard for years, BPM is dead. And which is kind of funny, because this, I think, is we need it more now than ever before, because of the way that the labor market is shifting, as well as the way that the mix of labor is happening within organizations that we've seen, with a mix of digital workers and human workers. How do you coordinate work between all these different types of workers? You get beyond that. We're also talking about third parties going outside of your organization. Yeah. To coordinate work efforts. You have to have some way to track all that stuff. So business process management and the concept of it has evolved to be a lot more robust than people have expected. That's why we've seen this growth.
Yeah. I once interviewed someone on the podcast who was saying, in his opinion, the best way to look at a process is to take a BPM mindset toward it initially, and then think about where automation can be applied. I just thought that was fascinating. And the person that said it was historically an RPA advocate. But I think once you understand the value of BPM and how it really does give you, it extends the value of automation across, it just makes so much sense. I think they will continue to come together.
I don't think
this is, as Monty Python says, I'm not dead yet. BPM is alive and well, and and actually going to grow at a pretty good pace, according to this research firm, which is great to hear.
It is great to hear, and I'm glad you brought Monty Python
into this.
We'll
always do that.
So our next article comes from livescience.com. This is fascinating in my mind. Scientists create toxic AI that is rewarded for thinking up the worst possible questions we could imagine. So to give some context on this, when AI models are being trained, oftentimes they're free to respond however their model identifies. And sometimes, as we've seen in the past with Tay and some of the failed early experiments on this, without some of this called red team training, where you put some antagonism into it to start with to train it what not to do, without that, the AI models can tend to throw out whatever they throw out without hitting any. So this is interesting. They're actually encouraging an AI to create these terrible questions and to be vulnerable.
You know, to me, this is actually one of the hopeful things about AI. I know that sounds weird given the title of this article, but AI is presenting an increasing number of risks or issues or challenges that people are accuracy, privacy, what this article is talking about, where AI can, you know, if someone asks it how to commit a suicide, it can give answers to that. You know, it can address the worst type of prompts that get put to it. But I love the fact that in this case, they're using AI to address the issues of AI. And I know some might say, well, that math doesn't equate. But I think if you look at the fact that there are prompts that we don't even know would bring, you know, a negative or a harmful response. That's really the biggest, I think, point of this article is that, and I'll read from it. It says that this AI can automatically generate a wider range of potentially dangerous prompts than any team of human operators could. So use AI to expand the testing, expand the pressure testing, if you will, to make sure that whatever this AI is, if it's a large language model or something similar, is there a potential for it to give a response to a prompt that may not even intend to be dangerous, but the response would go down that path. And I think to me, again, this is a good sign. It's a way that AI can address some of the challenges that AI has put in front of us.
Yeah, I can only imagine being on that team trying to fine tune an AI model to spew toxicity. How interesting that might be, and how at the end of the day, they probably have to wash off their eyes from all the things they see. So I can imagine that'd be a different type of job. But like you said, I think it's using AI to train AI,
right?
Because it gives us a much better output on the other side. So training the model for the negatives, mm-hmm. and then have that negative model go back to train the positive model on what not to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a really good way of you know, fighting fire with fire, if you will. So our final article for this week talks about citizen development. I know we've had citizen development discussed on our podcast several times. And actually, the people mentioned in this article on MSN were actually two of our guests that we've had, in fact, fairly recently. So the title of the article is Meet Your New IT Superhero. Citizen developers flex their AI muscles.
You know, citizen development
talk to me about this
topic.
One.
Tends to come up. It rears its head. It seems like about every 6 months. And I think now it actually makes more sense than it has in the past because of generative AI, because of what that has brought, you know, to the forefront. The article, and I do love the fact that it highlights Tom Davenport and Ian Barkin. Tom was on episode 264 not that long ago to talk about this topic, and he and Ian are writing a book about it. But you know, the idea that business people are becoming more technical, IT people are becoming more business minded, that's slowly been happening for a long time, but now Gen AI has accelerated it because knowledge is now so much more accessible. And not only Gen AI, but you have the increasing universe of no code, low code development tools like Blue Prism's UX Builder. I mean, the things that humans can use now to solve problems, whereas in the past they had to throw it over the wall to IT or put in a budget abstract and get it approved. I mean, it's amazing how far we've come. And so I think, you know, to me, this is a great time. a very, very relevant time to come forward with a book on this topic. And I look forward to reading it once Tom and Ian have put the finishing touches on it. I think later this year is what they said. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. I think of the, you know, we've talked about this a little bit in over various episodes that we've talked in the past. Our guests are seeing this kind of transition, but they're also seeing it with some kind of mm-hmm. caution going forward, because they'll bring forward the concept of governance and, you know, what do we do when folks who aren't programmers, for example, start jumping into a task that kind of looks like programming. And I think to your point, as we're looking at new tools like these low-code, no-code tools, or leveraging AI, where the programming, if right. you want to call it that, is prompting. It's natural mm-hmm. language. That reduces a lot of the barriers going from what business users are looking for mm-hmm. to implementing that in some kind of, and I'm putting like, you know, air quotes, code. And part of that, you know, we see this, there's a need for this output, there's a need for this execution. And without dramatically increasing the number of programmers we have, which is not going to happen, we're really going to see these type of tools fill in that gap, allowing business users to mm-hmm. take advantage of the actual outputs they want. I want to do this. Here's the actions yeah. I want. Here's the output I want.
Yeah, I thought it was also interesting. Ian Barkin in the article is quoted as saying that there is an impending shortage of 160 million tech workers. That is amazing. I'd like to go back and dig into that, see where that number comes from. But I believe it. I believe it. Everything else that you and I have done in researching the labor dynamics and you know the steadily declining labor force participation rate, the birth rate that's been declining for 70 years. There are going to be fewer tech workers available to companies. Right now, they're already feeling the crunch, but it's going to get worse. So citizen development fits right into mitigating that. I mean, let's pass the yep. burden of development over more and more to the business operations areas. I think that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, yeah. It's also interesting
who the ones
Ian
are getting benefit
and,
from it, right?
Tom are quoted in this article as yeah, saying that robotic process automation is one of the prominent technologies that citizen developers are using and will continue to use because of its affordability, because of its security, because it can interact with enterprise systems and data the same way that humans do. It does a lot of things well that AI, at some point may be able to do, but it can do it much more efficiently and securely, and it can do it in a transparently. And I was going to add one more, autonomously. So
and transparently,
whereas AI right now, especially needs more of a human in the loop inspection, AI or RPA, has been running autonomously in most cases, in most automations, for two decades. So, I thought it was an interesting article when I first saw it, when it got identified for this podcast, I didn't even know Davenport and Barkin were highlighted. And then when I read it, I smiled because, as you said, we've had them on the podcast. You interviewed Ian. I've had Tom on three different times. They're both great guests. And I look forward to reading this book. I think it will be very informative.
I do too. Well, that's a wrap for this week's Pulse Check. And if you haven't subscribed already, please subscribe. We will leave all the links to these articles in the show notes. Looking forward to talking with you next time on our Pulse Check.
Thank you for listening to Transform Now, the podcast from SS&C Blue Prism. You can find all of our episodes on your favorite podcast channel, as well as YouTube. To stay on top of the hottest topics in the world of intelligent automation, subscribe now. The future of work is here.